The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
It pays to delay. Markets bounce back this week. We've got a Fed rate decision ahead, and Facebook gets clobbered. All this and much more on episode number 604 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And the top of the morning to you. Happy St. Patrick's Day. This is Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, also the co-host of DH Unplugged, where myself and John C. Dvorak get together every Tuesday night and disassemble the news, put it back together, and kind of have a good time doing it. So if you haven't had the opportunity to join us there, make sure to do this and do that. We are also now available on Spotify. You can grab the latest episodes on Spotify, as well as Stitcher and iTunes. And of course, at the website, you can just do that. So check that out as well. Anyway, so glad to have you here. I thought we would spend some time talking about some of the items that really topped the news this week and go through the economics and a few other items. I have some listener questions as well that I'm going to go through. And I mean, it was a good week for markets, wasn't it? I mean, surprisingly, markets were able to bounce back again after a down week the week before, and it looked like that was just being cleaned up. And right at the start of the week, investors came back. Buy the dip mentality was all the rage once again, as we have seen time and time again throughout the last 10 years. And a lot of that is really based on the fact that there is the hope and the promise, at least the hint, that the Fed is going to stand pat on rate hikes, and we're going to talk about that. Also, the whole item with we're going to have no deal or maybe a deal with China, that doesn't seem to bother anybody, with the idea that eventually, sometime, we're not sure when, not sure how, or not sure what, we will actually get a deal with China done. If it doesn't happen this week or next week, or it's delayed for some time, or really doesn't change anything, I think that markets are going to at least be looking at this as something to look forward to, hoping that we could just resolve some of this stuff that's going on here. At the same time, we got Brexit news, and all of this whole thing is just falling apart. Now they're looking for more of a delay. So we have delays on the China deal. We have delays on Brexit. This is the old kick the can down the road mentality and action that we've seen so many times before. When there is a crisis one way or another and governments are involved and they just cannot get anything done. They sometimes create their own problems, as we've seen so many times, and then just decide to, well, we'll try to fix this. And if we don't, we're going to delay it. And hopefully what's going to happen is people will get used to the idea and not get concerned about it. And markets will revive, and because everything these days seems to revolve around markets in terms of decision-making when it comes to governments. You know, they don't want the markets to be upset. They don't want to really cause any kind of consternation and worry and anxiety because, oh my, you know, the markets are, and the truth is, the markets are a very big part of our overall income, net worth, the wealth of nations. So government officials will do whatever they can to keep the markets up as best as possible. Even when the news of slowing comes out and we see that the Eurozone is having significant slowdown and we're seeing that China, their numbers are continuing to just fail. We just saw their housing price index last week. We saw the exports before that. We saw the GDP numbers. I mean, really seeing significant downside. Meanwhile, their market's one of the hottest markets this year, because what happens is once we see any kind of concern with regard to the economic outlook, immediately government steps in or central banks step in to stimulate. Regardless of the concern about how much debt is outstanding, regardless of the concern about what the long-term impact of this is on generations to come and the costs associated with servicing that debt and what really is the impact of the debt on the economy, doesn't matter. Just keep on shoveling that debt. Just keep on pouring on that stimulus. Let's not fix the problem, the root of the problem, which, by the way, a good part of it is the fact that we have significant debt outstanding. It's been shown time and time again, the countries that have the largest debt exposure, or maybe even companies that have big debt exposure, don't perform. They can't. They're strangled. Think about your own situation. Think about a situation if you were to have massive debt and you're trying to build your net worth. That debt impedes the opportunity for you to really grow your net worth because you have all the debt service that you have to pay. And with that, if you expand that thought, very simple thought, to what we have here in the United States and other countries around the world with the amount of debt that was amassed over the last 10, 12 years. Well, right now it's going on almost 12 years. To pay for the damage that was done during the financial crisis, that was, of course, a good amount of that brought on by very loose policies by governments, central banks. Now they're cleaning up their mess by making more of a mess. I don't think it really is anybody, I don't think anybody really thinks that it's okay to keep on building debt. In the short term, okay, yeah, it's fine. It doesn't really bother anybody. In the long term, and when you really project this out for some time, it really is going to impede the growth opportunity. And that's why inflation has been so benign. One of the reasons. It's also why GDP has been just unimpressive for the last 10 years. I mean, getting to 4% GDP in the United States is like, oh my God, that's terrific. If we didn't have that debt load, which has been promised that it would be cut down by presidents and congresspeople and everybody everywhere in any campaign that goes on, they talk about, you know what, we have this horrible debt and we need to get rid of it because it's strangling us. And when they get into office, they just vote for more debt. Keep on raising the debt ceiling. Keep on issuing more debt by the Fed. Just keep on approving all of these expenditures and just keep on going. Could you imagine that if in your household you just said, you know what, since I have potentially an unlimited amount of debt that I could borrow, well, I'm just going to keep on spending. Eventually, that's going to catch up with you some way or another when you turn that corner where you can't afford to pay off that debt anymore. Because I didn't say you have unlimited income, unlimited revenue. No, I said you had unlimited debt. The same thing with countries. There is a limitation on the amount of income they bring in from taxes and other measures and other ways that they bring in revenue to the country, but they keep on increasing the debt load. And what's going to end up happening is that who's going to pay for it? You, me, we're all going to pay for it in the form of higher taxes one day, slower growth, less opportunity. All these things are going to come to a head eventually. When? I am not even going to try to predict. But you know what I'm talking about, and I'm sure you're agreeing with me. Because we are in an economic, we're really getting to a situation right now that we're going to reach terminal velocity in the amount of debt that we have to pay and the amount of revenue that's going to offset that and how it's actually going to get done. And it's going to be a problem, especially in the next downturn, whenever that is. And also, is there going to be a next downturn? Of course. Economy cycle. They always do. They always have. The question is not if they're going to cycle, but when are they going to cycle and how much time in between that trough and that recovery? That's the only question you have to ask. We know that economies cycle on a regular basis. It's just a natural progression. They get overheated. They do well for a while. Sometimes it comes down very quickly. You enter into a recessionary period, and then you know, move back into that slope back up and down. It's a simple S curve that we see all the time. a cyclical nature of the economic process. It's embedded in the process. It's just the way it is. Now, we're in a recovery right now that's lasted, let's call it 10 plus years. One of the greatest recoveries we've ever seen. One of the greatest amount of debt we've ever had. Greatest amount of stimulus we've ever put on. It's not an organic growth situation. It's really an artificial growth situation that is based on the amount of stimulus and lower taxes. This is not a setup for what I would envision for a long-term good policy moving forward. I don't really believe anybody thinks it is. It's a stopgap. But the stopgap that was supposed to be maybe 5 years long, we just can't get rid of it. It's stuck to us like crazy glue. It's not going away, this debt. And even when the Fed tries to reduce down their balance sheet by 10%, all hell breaks loose. I mean, when we saw the continuation of rate hikes and the Fed dropping some of their balance sheet assets on a continual basis by $50 billion per month, just cleaning up their balance sheet slowly but surely, it ended up being a horrific moment for markets. People were scared out of their minds. Liquidity was going to dry up. This was the end of the stimulus. And you remember back a number of years ago when people were looking at the stimulus as an addictive property related to markets, where people that were going off stimulus and markets that were coming off stimulus were having a really hard time. They're getting the shakes. They were trying to come off their addictive drug. And stimulus is just like that. It is an addictive drug for markets. And without it right now, they don't know how to operate. Even with a lower amount of stimulus, but just cutting back slowly is causing major problems for markets around the world and economies moreover. Now, markets may have popped back very nicely over the last couple of months, but look at what's happened to economies. We really haven't seen a significant amount of turning point for any of them. Eurozone is continuing to slow down, scaring the hell out of Mario Draghi, looking to go back to long-term bond purchases to stimulate the economy, to save the banks. The banks inside of the Eurozone, the major banks, look at their charts. They look awful. China's GDP is slowing down to the 6 to 6.5% rate. And for China, that's very slow. Japan is sounding off worries again. And let's not even talk about some of the emerging markets, what's going on there. So I think that this is all starting to catch up with us. It's not going to be an all of a sudden overnight process. But something is going to break eventually. And unfortunately, I do not believe that markets are getting it right now. Now, you might say, Andrew, what do you mean markets aren't getting it right? That the markets is what it is. You always talk about it's price that matters. I agree with that. Temporarily, I think there's been a shift in sentiment, and I think that has been brought upon by the idea that the Fed is going to slow down and possibly even drop rates. But even if they do so, even if they stop increasing rates and they only have maybe one, as a matter of fact, right now there's going to be, I think the number is less than 5% chance of a rate hike this year based on Fed funds futures. One hike maybe in 2019 when they expected to have four. That was what we're talking about, September of last year. The expectation was for another four rate hikes, 3 to 4 in 2019. And here we are thinking that there's probably not going to be any. And the potential for the Fed to go back to not having the runoff of their balance sheet is very high. What happened in one quarter? What happened is that because of the massive amount of debt and the incredible amount of requirement for markets to run on liquidity based on the Fed's movements and interest rates, and how this has all been set up over the years, and there's some other factors. There's definitely some other factors here. What happened is that you'll see the next cycle is going to be very dramatic because it will happen very quickly. We already saw that retail sales and consumer sentiment and home buying, all of that slowed down precipitously after the market started coming down, let's call it November. Now, a lot of this is is perplexing. A lot of people are like, wait a minute, I don't understand. You know, we have all these things going on around the world that are negative, but markets are going up. We see the some of the worst numbers we've seen in a decade in China, but their markets are the best we've seen in a while. Markets and economies can be dislocated for some time. Eventually, it catches up. But don't be too perplexed. It is perplexing. But don't be perpetually perplexed with all this, because there is those times that you do see the separation, anticipation of a change. And one of the things, like I said, is that we have an anticipation that the Fed is going to be changing their whole process. And that is good. There's a lot of carrots out there hoping that we'll get some good resolutions to the China deal. We'll get some good resolutions to what's happening with Brexit. A lot of carrots are taking investors along and with this hope that things will get better. Don't forget also that estimates were cut so dramatically that companies were able to beat the estimates in the last round of earnings. I'm not necessarily sure that's going to play out moving forward. And we're going to talk about some of that because I have some questions from listeners that came in that two of them, I think they're going to relate to these items pretty well. I did mention that coming up Wednesday, we're going to see an FOMC rate decision and a conference. And what are we going to expect? Again, I think we're expecting that there won't be any significant increase. And I don't think there's going to be anything more than a dovish sentiment, possibly a little bit less dovish. With the markets doing really well right now, the Fed has a little bit more breathing space than they did, let's say, in January, when they were just absolutely freaked out that markets were coming down as hard as they were and the volatility that we saw throughout November and December. So they have a little bit more breathing room there. However, the one thing that's become a problem is the dollar. We're going to, again, answer that question because that came in from, I think it was someone from Austin, if I'm not mistaken. But let's take a look at some of the recent economic reports and what happened last week. One of the things that I did notice was that we had a pretty big calendar last week in terms of economic reports. We saw that, let's see what we got here. Do I have this? We saw import and export prices pop up. We saw that new home sales came down a bit below expectations. There was a CPI that met the expectation plus 0.2, depending on how you look at the CPI, the headline or the core. Inflation was in check. Again, giving investors the thought that, you know, the Fed doesn't have to really move too aggressively right now because inflation seems to be in the right place. We did see also that week before a significant drop in the employment report, only 20,000 new jobs added. And you put in the items that the Fed looks at and that investors believe that the Fed looks at. And what you have is a recipe for a further amount of optimism that they'll hold back. Now, next week is coming up. It's a shortened week in terms of, well, it's not shortened, but there's not much going on. Monday, we have the NAHB Housing Market Index. That's the confidence index for builders. Expectations are about 64. Last was about 62. Builders are probably not going to be really rah-rah excited right now with the fact that they've seen a significant drop in home buying and extension of the buying process, days on market, days to sale. One of the things that they're also going to be looking at, and it's going to be interesting because we had some weather-related issues in the first part of the year, and the question, this is for March, some of that's cleared up. And as such, you may see a little bit of a better level of sentiment from builders. On Tuesday, we have factory orders. Now, on last we saw factory orders were up 0.1. Expectations of them is to pop back a little bit, up 0.3. Now, this is pretty much an area that I'm focusing on is factory orders. It's manufacturing issues. It's been slowing down. This is the time right about now that I anticipate that we're going to see some kind of a drop in all of this. An increase of 0.3% in factory orders is better than it's been, but still pretty light. I would expect that we're going to start to see a slowdown in all this as we are seeing that the rest of the world is really being affected dramatically now by all these tariffs. And because we saw manufacturing start to slow down, I would anticipate that factory orders are also going to start to slow down moving forward. On Wednesday at 2 o'clock, we got this rate decision by the Fed. Again, most people think that's going to be a nothing burger. We're going to see also the press conference that's going to be happening at 2:30, which will give us further insights into what the Fed is thinking and how they're thinking about things in the future. On Thursday, initial claims. We're going to see the Philly Fed Index. Expectations of that to come out at 3. Now, it was a negative 4.1. I'm betting that it's going to still be in very low, if not fall off a cliff very soon. Leading indicators are expected to be 0.2. A lot of that is market related after we saw the drop in leading indicators. On Friday, existing home sales are going to be coming out. That's pretty important. We're going to expect 5.2 million up from 4.94 million. Now, there was, again, a lot of weather-related issues and concern about things. This is for the month of February. I don't think we're going to meet those numbers. I would expect to be a little bit short of those numbers. Wholesale inventories are also going to be coming out. Last was 1.1%. We have a lot of earnings coming up also next week. Some of the ones that we're really going to be focusing on is FedEx. That's coming out midweek. On Tuesday, we're going to see Tilray on Monday. That's going to be after the market closes. That's going to be the manufacturer of CBD and marijuana products. That's going to be coming out. Expectations are for a loss of about 13 cents on about $12.5 million worth of earnings. What else are we going to be seeing here that's important? Let me just look down my list here for a second. Micron Technologies on Wednesday after the close. Expectations are for $1.69 a share. That's down from 2.82 a share a year ago. So these are the things we need to be looking at. Williams-Sonoma, the housing and housewares, cooking items. Companies coming out with earnings. Expectations for them to rise from $1.88 to $1.97. And then we got Canadian Solar on Thursday. Darden Restaurants. Friday, what do we got here? Thursday, we got Nike also. That's another important one. Nike's expected to make 64 cents per share. That's down from 88 cents per share last year. Tiffany and Company is going to be reporting also, expecting $1.60 from $1.67 last year. So a little bit of a drop there. So we are seeing that there are continuation of expectations from a year ago lower, and that would make sense. We'll see what the outlook is going to be. I really do believe we're going to start to see as the earnings season starts to pick up, which we have about 3.5 weeks until we see the major banks like JP Morgan and Goldman and Bank of America, Citi. That's going to start off about the 11th or 12th of April. And I do have a thought that there's going to be a real significant guidance cut that's going to cause the analyst to be caught off guard. So keep an eye on those. Let's get to a few other things. This dislocation of the market I mentioned, and I think we're going to see some bad news coming down the. I would be really surprised if the news is really good, let's put it that way, from companies. Now I'm going to mention something. I'm going to mention what we do for a minute because there's some new listeners that have come aboard. I see that there's been a real significant spike in listenership, so thank you for that. And I get some emails from time to time like, you know, what do you do? What's going on with you? And of course, you can find out everything over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. That's where we have a list of all the different strategies and how we do things. But we manage money. That's what we do. We manage money and have been doing so since about 1990 or so. Probably a little bit before that. But 1990 or so, been managing money. We have several different strategies. We have the global allocation strategy, which is a big picture portfolio allocation, full service for clients. And we include things like financial and retirement and estate and tax planning. There's a whole range of services that goes along with our global allocations if clients decide to use those. But basically what we do there is that we look at the big picture. We allocate and diversify a portfolio based on where we believe the opportunity lies in both fixed income and equity, alternatives, commodities, and we do that primarily with mutual funds and ETFs. And these are most oftentimes institutional, very low cost. We really spend a lot of time, you know, really focusing on cost factors within that portfolio strategy to understand and make sure that you're paying as little as possible for the greatest possible performance. So there's a trade-off, right? You want to make sure you have both going on. Not just pay the lowest cost because you want to get the best return potential. I mean, that's the theory, right? You want to have that trade-off. We also have Investology, which is similar to our global allocations, but the minimum is much lower. You ask for it over time. Like, listen, we have $500,000 minimum for the global allocations. Can you drop that down? So what we did is we stripped out some of the other services like the estate planning and tax planning and all that. And we just do a core investment strategy for you based on similar to what the global allocations are with ETFs and institutional-based mutual funds for the most part. And we bring together the best of robo and real advisor oversight and management. We call it advisor-crafted, technology-enhanced. That only has a $10,000 minimum. So if you're looking to get your feet wet and figure out what we do, that's probably a good idea. And then we have an aggressive strategy called the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. It's an aggressive long-short strategy that we have available. And this is for those that want to look for maybe an uncorrelated strategy that can go long or short or hedge. That also has a core positioning of equities. And these are individual equities in this. And we utilize, potentially options. And we utilize a variety of different strategies within the strategy. There's a $50,000 minimum there. But this is also for people that are really concerned about markets and don't want to just have long exposure. You want to have a couple of different types of diversification there and be able to have some short exposure. Right now, we have a very low level of net long exposure in the portfolio. Some of the probably the lowest we've had in about a year, give or take, maybe 8 months, I would say. But you want to take a look at that and you want to look at any of these strategies, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Listen, truth be told, we'd love really to check those out. And I personally would really love to work with you. So just go check that out. It's a good time of year to do so. Look at what you're doing now. Maybe look at the alternatives. We're here for you. I'm here for you. You work with me personally also on much of this. I oversee all of the global allocations, investment allocations, strategies. Work with the other people in the office to do implementation work, etc. But basically, you're going to be working with me. So if you have that desire, I have that desire. Now, moving along, what do we got? Let's see. I got some questions. Let's see. I got a question here. I got some good questions that came in, I thought. If you do have a question, you go over to the site and click on the Ask Andrew button there. This question comes in from Gerald V. I don't know where he's located. He says, I haven't heard much discussion about this topic. Lots of headlines about people complaining that their tax refund is either smaller or they owe money this year compared to last year, due to what seems because people didn't adjust their withholdings correctly. Yeah, we've heard about that. Can this have a two-pronged effect or on earnings announcements going forward? First, next earnings report will be for the first quarter sales. If people got smaller or no refunds, will sales have suffered on electronics, travel, clothing, and other discretionary purchases compared to last year? He said secondly, if people adjust their withholdings so that next tax season they get a refund, will the rest of the year's sales be lower because people's smaller paychecks? I think this has so many different possible answers here. Because on one hand, I believe what your thesis here is correct. So I do believe that there was, unfortunately, a surprise where people are probably paying less taxes overall, but yet they didn't get that refund, and they believe the refund is like this, you know, this gift back to them. And because they didn't adjust their withholdings correctly, they got less, and now all of a sudden they were expecting more. So yes, we may see a slowdown in sales because of that. At the same time, though, they have more money in their paychecks each and every week. So that may offset some of that. It may be a problem for big ticket items, as you mentioned, some of the electronics and travel, et cetera. Maybe not clothing as much. Maybe some discretionary items on a big ticket item. I don't necessarily believe that there is going to be that much of a change in the everyday. So I'm not worried about that. Your second item, though, is if people adjust their withholdings to take out more because they want to get a refund, that is a possibility. It's a wild card. And we don't even know how to quantify that. There's no way to quantify that because we don't know how many people will even think about doing it. How many people know that they could do that? You know, change their withholding? Or they'll just simply adjust their spending, saying, you know what? I got more of my paycheck now. I realize I'm not going to get more in the future. So what I'm going to do is just have a lower expectation. But I think the first time when this comes to be, when they see the smaller refund and they get the smaller refund, yes, they probably had plans to spend that somehow for either a vacation, for a big ticket item, something that they usually use it for, maybe even paying down credit card bills. And they're not going to be able to do that. So the impact, I think, is going to be greatest this year, this tax season. And then they'll get used to it. But again, there's so many sides of this particular question that I just don't seem to believe that we could really quantify any of this. And even if the results are that it's exactly as you say, it's going to be difficult to really discern from the numbers that that was the cause. It wasn't something else. So we have a second question that came in from David R. from Austin. He says, it seems that the U.S. dollar has been rising lately. When currencies go up, that is not often good for companies. Why is there no effect on U.S. companies? Export nations usually get the biggest knock. I don't understand. Okay. So I think, let me just clarify this question. I think what you're asking me is that with the currency in the United States rising, how come we don't see that much an impact on stock prices with the idea that you're going to see earnings impacted? So when you talk about countries, and I think you mentioned this about export nations, and let's talk about like Japan and Singapore, which have pretty big exports, they have a really big issue with this. When their currency moves against them higher, what ends up happening is that it hurts their stocks. And while we also export to an extent here, we also have a thriving domestic economy. The exports in the United States are not as much of a big item. The dollar strength is not as bad on our companies from that aspect. Whereas Japan is probably the poster child for this. In Japan, when you see that yen racing higher, it really hurts their stock market. I mean, it's pretty highly correlated, but it's really not as much here. At least it's not from the aspect of what traders do. As a matter of fact, we've seen the dollar rising of late, as you've mentioned, and we've seen the stock market just not even have a worry in the world about it. There's other things that work here in the background too. Dollar rising can mean that there's a lot of people that are putting money and selling the currencies of other nations to put money into the markets here. Who knows what sovereign wealth funds are converting their currency into dollars and buying the our stocks here, whether it's in the form of ETFs or futures or individual stocks. However, it also stands to reason, I believe, that we'll see a significant impact on earnings next quarter from multinationals. The dollar strength over a short period of time is not a problem. Over long periods of time, it really does eat into the profits, both on a earnings and on a net profit basis for companies in the United States, particularly those that are really doing a lot of business outside the borders. The big companies that do these large exports will have some problems with this. Also, I think just to tag on to this, there is some more perplexing. So I guess we're perplexed in this show today. There's some perplexing items when it comes to this whole idea of the slowdown in China and Europe and the world economies. And what's going to be the impact here? Because 40% or so of the S&P's 500 companies' earnings are reliant on the earnings from overseas. And I think if you add the fact that you have a higher dollar and you add the fact that these other economies are slowing down, again, I would expect to see that there's going to be some real concern by companies and guidance cuts. And when you look at that, recently stocks have rallied without any regard for the future, it looks like. Every time you even see futures down in the pre-markets at 3, 4, 5 in the morning, they just pop up and do almost a Pavlovian kind of response when the bell rings at 9:30. Buy, buy, buy. Could it be stock buybacks? Yes. And if it is, We're about to enter into blackout periods, by the way. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to start seeing more and more companies unable to be purchasing their shares. Watch what happens with Apple. That will be your key. Apple starts to come down into earnings season. You'll see that that's going to be what's going on with markets, because buybacks have terminated until they can issue their earnings. So hopefully I answered those questions. If I didn't, I apologize. Write me. If you have questions, you can just go over to disciplinedinvestor.com and simply click on the Ask Andrew button and ask away. I also want to mention that if you have any desire to check out how I talk about technical analysis and do a pre-market briefing each and every Friday, 9 a.m. in the morning, Eastern Time, TradeStation has asked me to run a Friday morning market briefing. You can join in that WebEx conference. It's an online little show of my screens and what's going on. We answer questions about what stocks you have and what's going on technically. We'll put a link in the show notes for this episode and make sure to be there. It's pretty cool. Very, very quick. 9 to 9:30. Just banging on out. We go through very quickly all the items that are currently involved in the last couple of days, what to look forward to, and then go through the market movers, what to look for, setups, etc. So go over there, the Friday morning market briefings at TradeStation through TradeStation University. And again, I'll put that link in the show notes. So I was just toying around with the idea. How about we talk about Facebook for a second? Facebook got slammed pretty good the last few days. You know, I was thinking about this. I'm not a big fan of Facebook, the stock, that is. Well, I'm not really a big fan of Facebook either, but that's a side note. I think that when you look at the stock right now and you look at where it's come from, where it's gone to, and some of the things that are really out there, remember, the last few quarters, the guidance from management and the outlook was pretty ugly. They came out with some pretty soft guidance overall, and the stock came down to, what, 150? Then it rallied back to about 175 or so, back to about 160 right now or so. I think about 165. And one of the things that it's interesting is there's clear evidence that many users are starting to terminate accounts. And there's also a lot of discussion about government inquiries. Now there's a criminal investigation against the company due to this sharing of data that we saw some time ago. It's taken a while to get these things going. And privacy appears to be becoming more and more of an important issue. You know, we saw that there's been a new commercial coming out for Apple talking about privacy and security. And I think this is a direct smack at what we've seen from companies like Google and particularly in Facebook. And now we had the live stream of the mosque shooting, and that's not going to help anything either. So as we have this concern about privacy, it's kind of the maturing of the social media environment and the reality that people are leaving. Advertisers are questioning their spend. I just don't see a real bullish argument for this name. I haven't really seen a bullish argument for this name in a long time. I just don't understand with all the different options that they're looking to go to, or they're looking to have private messaging being more important. How does that impact their advertising in a material way to their benefit? It doesn't make any sense. They're trying to monetize Instagram. They're having problems, of course, with the moving from the advertisements to the stories, to the streams, to the news feeds. I mean, they're trying to reinvent themselves. There is a definite problem. They look like they're scrambling. And we've seen many high-level executives, and the one last week in particular, departing. This is not a good sign. Where we see a company dragged in front of Congress, where we see now that there is a concerted effort by a lot of people looking to run for president, whether they get in or not is another story, whether they're lunatics or not is another story, but there is a direct push to break up some of these companies and to find them, to constrain them, to control them. And when Mark Zuckerberg got in front of Congress and he was asking for their help, I mean, that was a problem, in my opinion. You don't want their help. Private companies do not want the help of the government. It will become messy. Now you open the door for that, and they're going to come at you. And on top of it, the fake news and the political campaigns and the way that we are seeing this whole issue, while we're entering into the political campaign season, there'll be more spending with that. I think the I think that users are going to be very concerned about looking and believing at what anything they see there, and the impact of these advertisements are going to get lower and lower. The engagement by the users on this is become more and more difficult because of what they've allowed to happen and the trickery. You know, you could fool me once, you could fool me twice, but you're not going to fool me three times. And Facebook, as they want to be, you know, this all-knowing about you and providing targeted advertising for their advertisers, which makes sense. Why not? It does seem that there is a progression, anecdotally, from what I hear from people around and what you see everywhere else, that there is a bigger concern about what is being absorbed through Facebook. There was a time that people would say, a lot of people, where do you get your news? Facebook. Well, the times are changing. Because once they said that, what ended up happening was there was the ability to try to twist, turn, and change the news to manipulate what people were thinking. And people caught on to this. And they're catching on to this. Less and less young people are signing up and using Facebook. More people are canceling and closing their accounts. Advertisers are questioning their spend and the benefit of their targeted spending. The only thing that you can say to me right now, and I will go with, is what are the alternatives? Where are they going to go? Where are advertisers? And the answer is, I don't know. So they're not going to just necessarily drop off Facebook, because it is one of the better places to advertise and get targeted advertisements out there. But again, I'm going to state this for the record. I just don't see the bullish argument at this time for this stock. Now onto another stock for a moment here. I mentioned on Twitter, you can follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, one word. I mentioned that Ross Gerber from Gerber Kowalski is going to be our guest next week. And I mentioned next week a little bit prematurely. So it's not this week, it's next week he's going to be on. He's a big Tesla bull. I mean, I would go so far as saying a fanboy, but he's a Tesla bull. And he's going to be my guest next week. And if you want to ask him a question, put it through my Twitter feed. Because we're going to have to get to the bottom of something here. And that is all the shenanigans that we've seen and the bad acting done by Elon Musk, and he'll defend them because I've seen him do it this before. And he's, again, an expert on this company. I'm not. I'm an observer of this company. I look at the fundamentals. I look at the chart. So I'm not going to, you know, have the ability to rattle off the amount of cars they're going to produce, or, you know, their net interest margin, or their, their R&D spend or their CapEx. He's going to be able to do all that and try to defend it that way. I'm talking big picture. He's going to get granular. I'm going to tell you right now. But we're going to have to get to the bottom of this whole shenanigans with Elon Musk and his argument with SEC, and if he's fit to be CEO, and if he wants to be CEO, and why the announcement of the Model Y was not received well. Some people are saying it doesn't look so much different from their other cars, their other recent cars. It's supposed to be an SUV crossover kind of thing, and it doesn't look like it. But we're going to ask him these questions. If you have questions for Ross Gerber, you can also send them in through the Ask Andrew. I will get to them. We'll spend some time talking about this and other big tech names that he is pretty much all in on. So we'll go through that as well. I want to thank you for joining me. We're going to end it here this week and spend some time working on our discussion for next week. You can go over to the Disciplined Investor, check out all the things that are available there. Like I said, really like to work with you if you have the desire to work with us on your portfolios, and we could just do a portfolio review with you and see what's going on and come up with some ideas. Until next week, have a great St. Patrick's Day. And my birthday's coming up, so I'll be celebrating on, I think it's Wednesday the 20th. And before that, of course, hope to see you on the Disciplined Investor podcast, or hopefully to hear us, I guess, and see you on our chat room on the Discipline Invest on the DH Unplugged. Sorry, DH Unplugged. The D's got confused there. DH Unplugged with John C. Dvorak next week on Tuesday. Until then, I wish you the best. I'll see you then. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.